All right, so we are here on Thursday recording. The usual Wednesday show had to be rescheduled because apparently Mr. Adam over there had a guest for dinner.
Yeah, so first time we've had a is the term gentleman caller. Is that still appropriate? Is that more of a 1930s?
I don't know. That almost sounds more scandalous if you put sounds it that
inappropriate.
Way.
The first time that Jordan brought a boy home, who is my oldest, who is a junior in high school, and I must say, I feel like I did better than my future father-in-law did when he first met me, as I had to travel to another country because that's where they lived at the time. And the man did not say anything to me for two full days. And I swear we were having soup at dinner one night and he just sat there staring at me like this while eating his soup and didn't say a word. It was the most excruciating thing. And he still talks to this day about how he thinks it's hilarious. So I think I did better than him. So there's that.
So shortly after I started dating, my wife came home to a Memorial Day cookout with all the family. And I was going to get to meet all the extended family and everything. And Rebecca's beloved nanny is no longer with us, but walk in the door. And as she's coming out of the kitchen looking down to greet me, she says, "Boy, I hope you like to eat." "Oh, looks like you do."
How about you, Jeff? You got anything for us?
Well, actually, Beth's father has never spoken to me.
Soccer chat with two T's. Because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Well, I mean, you know, you have to stop talking in order to give him an opportunity to.
No, I don't know how to do that. Oh, you mean Jeff. Okay, so before we actually get into the show, as Alex mentioned, we're recording this on Thursday night. You may or may not be aware, Thursday night around 7:30, the USLPA released a statement. We are not going to read it here. Feel free to go out to their Twitter and possibly their Instagram to find what the statement is. But basically, they are not happy with how long it is taking the Red Bulls to make a determination on the current suspension that has been ongoing for Jimmy Obleda. Within that, they indicated that I guess the Players Association has at least been told, unlike the fans, that he is not coming back for the season and that they will be making a decision after the season. That was not good enough for them. Honestly, it just released within like 15 minutes of us starting to record. So we don't really have a detailed response other than to say, yeah, we kind of agree. We would like this to be closed. It feels like a cloud that has been unnecessarily hanging over the team for a long time. We don't know what that conclusion is because we are not privy to the details of the investigation. We know that he said, she said stuff that comes out of the statements from the USLPA, but we don't know the nuts and bolts. But we do feel like 3 months is probably enough to decide a decision, and it is time. So we do agree on that. I don't know that we agree on the timing, but once again, just released. We haven't had time to fully digest, but we did want to address that, hey, that did happen right as we started to record. And we kind of agree that something should have happened at this point, one way or the other.
I think overall we have been consistent in asking the team for transparency in just about everything.
Yeah.
There is lots of times where it feels like there is not word coming out where things should be explained.
And even if you can't, for whatever reason, are not able to talk about it because, you know, things are going on, let us know what you can't say, but that you hear us.
Well, I mean, honestly, if the Players Association has been told he's not coming back to the end of the season, they could have made that announcement. They could have said, our investigation will not be concluding until the end of the season to give us an opportunity to fully review the findings and a decision will be made at that time. They could have done that, and at least you're not leaving everybody in limbo, right? So they're definitely culpable for, at this point, not taking action fast enough. I don't know enough about any of the stuff that's mentioned in the Players Association statement. There's a safe sport org that's associated with the Olympics somehow. I don't really know how it fully connects with FIFA and how all that works. Like I said, just released, so I can't really tell, like, this org that they have now added the complaint to, how they're connected with USL and its sanctioning, but I'm sure there's some sort of connection there. And ultimately, if it turns out that organization is able to put even further sanctions on the team or the league, that falls on the team in the league for not taking the time to do this in a quick manner. Like the allegations are substantial, and they're something that should get a resolution faster than 3 months later, still nothing. And that's just the truth. All right, so let's move on to more bad news, and let's talk about that Tucson game. So I'm going to start with you, Alex, because you have possibly the most, non-positive view of what happened. You may have posted to a number of social media statements about how you feel like the team at this point, how did you word it? I think you said, team when it plays like this doesn't deserve to be in the playoffs, I think it's something to that effect.
I was probably overly harsh because it was midnight and I was frustrated.
Yeah.
And sleepy. Sleepy and frustrated, never a good combo. So there are a lot of situations throughout the season, and I think it's just kind of been shown that possibly there's things behind the scenes that we don't know about happening. But basically, you know, we've lost three games against Tucson. We're basically half of Tucson's win total. Without us, Tucson's not even part of the playoff push right now.
Well, without us, Tucson has averaged less than a point a game.
So you look at that, you look at, you know, we've talked many, many times about the dropping points late in games. And without that, we would be already qualified for the playoffs. You know, you take the 9 points with Tucson, we'd be tied with Richmond at the top of the table. So there's just a lot of times where it feels like we have failed to capitalize and be able to drive our own momentum and have ourselves in the driver's seat comfortable.
Yeah.
We're making everything as hard as possible coming into these last three games, two of which are on the road. And, you know, it goes back previous seasons, the way that we sputtered at the end of last season, losing on the road and missing out on being second place in the league. You know, we have the league record for unbeaten runs, and it was basically two ties to a win during that unbeaten run. Plenty of other times where it seems like we have everything could be in our hands if we would take advantage. And this game in Tucson was just that sort of situation. They were sloppy. They were off their game. You could tell things did not really fall together well. And we ended up losing in a really frustrating fashion to a team that I don't think really outplayed us that much.
Yeah, I would agree that they didn't outplay us. I don't think they've outplayed a single one of their three victories, if we're being fully honest. And I think for me, I don't feel like the players have given up. I feel like they are playing hard. Like, I'm not looking at players saying that guy's lollygagging or that guy's not putting a full effort in. Like, there's no player I'm looking at and saying, you're not really doing what you said you're going to do.
I think you're right there. I would agree.
I would also argue that the front office keeps trying to add pieces when pieces that they may have gotten in the beginning of the season haven't worked out like they expected. So there's been additions throughout the season. I look at an addition like Kraft, who has come in and really given a spark when he's come off the bench. I look at an addition. I can't believe my mind just blanked on it. The newest addition.
Yvonne Gutierrez.
Yes. He's obviously brought a spark. So the front office is still making the effort. But for whatever reason, whether it's the, like what we kind of mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast, that the cloud hanging over us where it's, you know, we don't really fully have a full-time coach. Is that affecting the team? Like, is that why we're not able to turn the corner? I don't really know. But Jeff, I'm going to turn to you to kind of get into specifics. You know, what did you think of the team when we got on the field? Like, the team that's played in that first half, when you're watching that, how did you feel the team was, where it was going in that game?
Well, I think not just that game, but in recently, I feel like we're a team that could score at any moment. And you're anticipating that we're going to be able to score because we've got all the signs, but it's also a team that I'm not confident we're going to win. And it's a really strange thing. We're a much better team than we were a year ago. And we have the pieces. Last year, we were running out of steam. We were running out of players, running out of health. This year, that's not the issue. But we are running with the same result as last year, where we are running out of steam, but it's not because our players aren't healthy. And I'm not sure if it's the, like, I've never seen a Red Wolves team that looks so capable of creating some fantastic goals. And they do. And at any minute, I think they're the ones who are going to score. But I also don't feel like I'm confident we're going to win the game. And that's so weird. Because we were a far better team than Tucson. But Tucson took care of business. We did not.
Yeah. So they got in the first half, they scored first via a penalty. And I think a penalty they deserved. Any disagreement on that?
Even Josue España seemed to agree it was a penalty they deserved. That is the least protestation I have ever seen for a penalty kick given in League One.
Yeah.
And he was just like, man, what am I supposed to do there? And I agree. He did everything he had to do to try to hustle back and slow down that counterattack. It was just kind of a bad luck play. We had done a corner and they tried to ping it back to that corner and play in again. And this was what their Achilles heel was all night, was just like a bad touch led to a turnover that led to a counterattack. And so I don't have any issue with Josue España. He did everything he had to do to try to hustle back and do what he could. And it was just bad luck that he ended up running into the player.
Yeah. I know so, that's a good assessment of that.
So then we were able to tie it up because, well, was that a good call?
They were shielded. The player, I believe, whose arm it hit off of was shielded from the camera angle.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was. I think
that's kind of where I was at. I was like, I don't know.
Was probably chicken winging. I believe that's the motion that I saw the referee make as they were pulling the yellow card out of their pocket to give to the guy. So Rafa cut in, tried to take a shot, and apparently the guy made himself bigger and the ball came off his elbow.
Yeah. So what did you think of who took the shot? Was that surprising to you?
Yeah, I was expecting it to be Tanky.
He's taken four for us already this season, right?
I know. And there has been some chatter that, you know, maybe he's still able to get the golden boot for us this year. He's still in the running. He's not leading, but he's our leading scorer. But at the same time, Mo is currently our most effective attack in the past month.
He stepped up, he hit it hard and low to a corner. So apparently he's the one that won the contest where you were automatically disqualified for trying to do a panenka.
Yeah.
And so good on Mo for finishing the penalty.
Yeah, I think it was well taken, and I think that may be why he took it, to be honest with you. I think it may have just been kind of a, no, unless somebody messes this up, we're giving somebody else a chance. And so that takes us into the second half. More of the same, like what Alex mentioned earlier, like a lot of what created their opportunities happened, and it happened again, right? Like, just feels like second verse same as the first.
The whole game, it was very frustrating to me. Of it just felt like they were all graduated from the Giassi Zardes school of first touch. Every pass
it's not a good school.
Every pass was bouncing off the feet, causing them to have to take two steps to try to control the ball. And then, boom, there's a Tucson player sticking a toe in. And they just could not generate any rhythm, passing, build up. And it just didn't work. They weren't able to get themselves free like you really wanted. There was one really good turn by Juan Galindres in the box. The Tucson keeper came up with the save. I'm not impressed with the Tucson keeper. He's usually he's good for about one save, and that's unfortunately really all we asked of him.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't get that fine touch down. And it was just, it was a not a great back pass with not a great bad touch that led to a counterattack, and someone was not at the back post.
Yeah. We still have this problem. We keep kicking the ball backwards instead of pushing forward. Tucson did very good on closing down those opportunities. But I kind of wondered if you continue pushing in and hopefully get another foul, it gets you in a better position. But it just gets so frustrating. We either kick it back or we give it away. We had players just not able to get to anticipating where the ball's going. Someone would open up something and they'd move there, and then the other player's not there. So that's frustrating. It's seeing that too often. But the other thing that's frustrating back is just kick it all the way back and start over again when you're already got that momentum. It's really kind of, yeah, it's, we've lost some steam there, guys.
And so that takes us to the theme of USL League One for the weekend, which is every game gets a red card. Weird thing has happened in USL League One. Since September 21st, there have been 7 games. All 7 have at least one red card.
Boy, League One referee is going to be getting that red card bonus.
And because you get one, and you get one, and you get one.
And that brings me to what I want to say. That was the weakest, crappiest second yellow I have ever seen. Like, that is not even it might not even be a foul, much less a yellow.
I would agree. And I was tickled because there was a play later in the game where a Tucson player hit Mo. He went running kind of behind Mo and clipped his ankle, and Mo went down.
Yeah.
And did his Mo thing. Mo likes to go down and grab the ankle. He's what we call a Dennis.
Yes.
And that's okay. He's on our side, so he can do that. But it goes down, and I, you know, cynically, sarcastically say, oh, where's the yellow on that one, huh? And then there, sure enough, there he was giving the player a yellow for basically kind of running alongside the ankle of Mo Espinoza and knocking him down. Mo Espinoza, by the way, for the guy that was doing the play-by-play. I feel like we should have done this whole show saying the wrong name and then correcting ourselves, because that's also... added to my frustration.
He had the wrong team at one point.
The place we're playing, it's named after Father Eusebius Kino.
Like,
Heinofield? Hello? That was so irritating.
He legitimately, at one point, I'm not kidding you, he said that this North Carolina team, because Tucson played North Carolina on Wednesday. I was like... You're not even the right state. At least if we were Charlotte, you could say like this North Carolina team and get away with it, right?
Right.
Or if you said this Carolina team and we were Greenville, you could get away with it. But dude, know what game you're on. But can we come a little bit back to the fact that games with a red card?
Yeah. Terribly soft yellow against DJ on what maybe is a foul coming in on a play. Maybe. And like I said, giving that second yellow to a red all of a sudden put him in a box. And every time two people collided, all of a sudden he was whipping that card out of his pocket. And that's just classic League One referee.
You are not wrong, but he'd started that actually before then. Right. So
yeah,
he gave Villalobos a yellow in the 52nd. He gave Benton his first in the 60th. He gave him a second, the 67th.
Now Benton's first one was a pretty professional yellow.
Earned, deserved. Okay, but then 71st minute to Tucson, and then 81st minute to us, 84th minute to us, 90 plus 4th minute to us. That is way too many cards for a game that didn't seem like they were about to start fighting each other.
No, for like, sure.
This for was sure. not a rough game. Like, for there to be that many yellow cards, 7 total yellow cards, including one that ended up with a red card in a game that I would argue wasn't that rough, is bad refereeing. And I know we get on the refs all the time and whatever, but I'm sorry. 7 straight games in your league where there has been a red card isn't your league's players. It's your refs. Like, because I haven't gone to look, but a lot of these are double yellow reds, right? Like, both of ours are double yellow reds. I haven't gone to look at Central Valley's from last night to see if theirs was a double yellow red or not. But that's another big part is that it's a straight red. So his was a straight red, and I don't know, it could have earned it. I feel like straight reds are more likely to actually be earned reds than double yellows. I feel like one of the things that drives me absolutely crazy in this league is we give a soft yellow card early and they don't take it into account on the second. Like the Greenville game was a second yellow. They gave a yellow card in the 14th and then another one in the 40th. Like two yellows in the first half. That had to be really rough. Like, and like I said, I haven't watched these, but you know, just going and looking at it, it says to me, you've got an issue. Like you there's something wrong with your refereeing where that's what's happening, right? The going back again, the forward versus Tormenta game, another double yellow. That game, listen to these cards. The 15th minute, the 21st minute, the 26th minute, the 34th minute, and the 41st minute. And then in the 46th minute, the first minute of the second half, he gets his double yellow. Really? Like, Ford Madison doesn't have enough good play or rough players with or players that have any sort of passion to get that many yellow cards. Like, anyways, sorry.
But they look fabulous.
They look fabulous. Wonderful jerseys. But yeah, so. Anyways, seven straight games. So basically, it's going to be on the shoulders of North Carolina and Union Omaha and Greenville Tucson to keep that going because their games start before ours. So hopefully one of them will break it so we don't feel the need to continue the red card world. Unless it's the Independents getting them, then I'm okay with it. All right, so let's turn towards you know what? Before we do that, I want to talk about one other thing that I've really had planned on talking about at the top of the show, but the USL Players Association announcement I thought needed to be addressed. And that is the sad news of our first head coach, Coach Hankinson, passing away from cancer in this past week. Our thoughts go to his family. He definitely had an impact on a number of the players that played for him, that he coached. He was very approachable for a lot of fans have talked about how approachable he was to them. Just seemed like a genuinely nice guy. He didn't leave on the best of situations. I think he was a health issue when he left. And that's why Calvin Falvey technically took over, even though it wasn't technically Falvey. It was Falvey, right, that took over at the end of the season right. That first year. But sad news. Thought we'd share that in case you hadn't seen that on social media and you do listen to the podcast.
Yeah, he was a really good guy. Eamon Zeid had posts on social media talking about what he meant in his life. I would encourage you to go read that. It's really moving and touching. And, you know, my heart goes out to Eamon. I know we give him a gentle ribbing on this show quite often, but to have someone who plays that kind of role in your life pass away is really hard. And we feel for him dealing with that and the family of Coach Hankinson as well.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about setting the tone of who we were, and if you think of that first class, the Red Wolves first class, there's a lot of them that came in to play for Hankinson.
So 100%.
That leaves a really big mark. And you look at some of these players that we fell in love with and really kind of set that tone. He's all, even though he wasn't coaching as long, but he helped develop our identity.
Yeah.
As one that's a tough team, especially at home.
All right. So I do want to turn towards this game this weekend. And before we do that, though, I do want to talk a little bit about where we are in the standings so that we somewhat sets up what this weekend looks like. So we are currently sitting in sixth at 37 points. The next closest to us that also has only played 27 games is Central Valley at 34. Tucson's sitting there with 26 games played, so they played one less than us, but they're at 30, so they couldn't even get to 34. So the closest to us on points and games played is a full three points behind us. Hailstorm's played one more game. They're a point behind us. So that's what's behind us. That's the worry of, like, are we going to drop out of playoff position? But the reason I want to bring up what's ahead of us is – we still very much control our own destiny on hosting a playoff game, even though we're currently 3 points out of that position. And the reason for that is we play Tormenta and Charlotte Independents, who are both ahead of us. If we win those games, they can't be ahead of us on games one, which is the first tiebreaker. The next tiebreaker is goal differential. There's no way they're catching us if we're beating them in those games, because currently Tormenta's even and Charlotte Independence is negative and we're at 12. So we 100% control our own destiny for that fourth spot and to get to host whoever finishes in the sixth or in the fifth spot. But that first hurdle comes this weekend in the form of Charlotte Independence. What are you guys thinking as we go into this weekend? This Charlotte team has played pretty well of late, right? They're on a three-game winning streak, which includes wins over Greenville, wins over Central Valley Fuego, over North Carolina. They are one of the other teams that have lost to Tucson, but you know, they've won three in a row, including winning a game while on a red card that they got in the 79th minute and held on, even though a penalty to get to go to North Carolina. But three-game winning streak. What are you guys thinking if they come to town?
You know, a month ago, I would have thought this would have been a gimme, and I would have thought that this was about an easy three as it had been. But the combination of their surge and our dip, it comes at a dreadful time for us. So hopefully our team is going to wake up and realize this is the last home game, and the fans are going to make it known it's the last home game for the regular season. That is otherwise, it's not a given that we're walking away with 3 points.
I'm glad the players are able to come back to CHI to have the lift from the fans. It's going to be an absolutely gorgeous night. Come on out to the field. Fireworks post-match. They're doing a beer fest thing with lots of different breweries around if you come pre-game. But it's going to be a gorgeous night. I think that's going to help have a lot of people want to be outdoors on Saturday night. And I think they can bounce back and win this game. I think they match up well. We've played well against Charlotte both games. Of course, we had the 7-1 smackdown. We had a game where it really felt like we were in control, except for a couple really bad flubs in the game we played in Charlotte, where it's one of those ones we walked away feeling like we should have won it. But to me, there's no such thing as a gimme in League One anymore, ever again. I'm never falling for any of those traps. Miguel Ibarra, they've got a couple other really speedy players. They have one attack. They have a center forward who looks like he's an extra in some Viking movie. Who's big and strong, and his hair is, I think, kind of braided and pulled back. And, you know, it just looks like a berserker. And so they could punish us. If we fall asleep, they could punish us. I think it's going to be really important having Aaron Lombardi back. I think we're going to see Yvonne Gutierrez get a start, and I think a full game of him in the midfield with, say, Carrera Garcia, Jimmy Villalobos, all those things is going to be good for our team. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, so this is an important game. It's our last home game. Weather worked out well for us. We want to, you know, feel like all I'm doing is mentioning things that we want to reach out to. But obviously, you know, a hurricane went through Florida this week, and there's a lot of tragedy associated with that. And originally that hurricane remnants was going to be coming through not only here, but going to go through Statesboro, who's opening their stadium this weekend. And it actually pushed out further east. So we do end up not having that weather that may have been here on Saturday. So it will be a nice night. We have to get this win. A loss here really puts us in trouble. It doesn't put us in trouble to miss the playoffs. It just doesn't because of the games we have remaining. But it almost guarantees us that we don't host a playoff game. If we lose this game, we go 6 points, or not six, we go 5 points behind Charlotte Independence. And they would have two more wins than us. So we would need them to lose both their games that were remaining. And they play North Carolina in their last game. And North Carolina by then will more than likely be eliminated. So this game's huge. And we have to win it. That said, I think we should win it too. As we look at the games we have remaining, this game and our next game following this are the two, in my opinion, most winnable games of our remaining three. We play Charlotte, We play North Carolina, who once again could be eliminated by that game on October 8th, which makes for a totally different atmosphere, both in the stadium and with that team. The Tormenta game could be a fight to see who gets to host a playoff game. That could be huge. If we don't win this game, though, we put ourselves behind the eight ball and are really trusting other teams to do our work for us. Win this game, set yourself up to be the team that's going to be hosting. And who knows, maybe you get really lucky and all the other games fall your way and you still end up somehow miraculously in that second spot, because that's, believe it or not, is still technically possible. Highly unlikely. Let me make sure that's clear. I do not expect it to happen. But if we go undefeated the rest of the way, you know, that puts us, you know, sitting on 46 points. It is not improbable for Union Omaha and Greenville to not reach five more points. Like, it's possible. We're only 4 points back of them. We can get 9 points. We can get to second. It's still theoretically possible. I've done all the math on it. Unlikely, because you would need everything to fall a certain way, because there are currently four teams ahead of us for that second spot.
Right.
Win your three games, and you will host a playoff game. That should be the what we're telling, the what the coach is saying. Win this game. Win versus North Carolina. We'll go into Tormenta. We'll win that game, and we're going to come back in front of these fans that we're going to see this weekend, and we're going to win that playoff game too. That's where it starts. Tucson, North Carolina, Ford, Madison, they are basically eliminated, even though they're not. Hailstorm and Central Valley are really the only teams we have to worry about possibly catching us if we don't win. And even then, I don't look at their schedule and think we have to win all three to get in. It's more of, are we going to get a playoff host or not? Like, if you look at Hailstorm, they got Central Valley and Tucson left. So one of them has to either win or they tie. If they tie, it pretty much makes Hailstorm impossible to get to us if we win two out of three. If they win that game, then Central Valley can't get to us, and they're still needing help. So it's not panic mode. We're going to make the playoffs more than likely, unless it just lose all three games, win the game.
Yeah. It would be a really good time to start winning games. I'm just saying, that's my,
I mean, we're getting close to where if you don't win, you go home no matter what, because we only have three regular season games left anyways.
Yeah. So, honestly, I think the big thing to play for, yeah, it's theoretically possible to get the second, but I think trying to get either third or fourth to where you get to host a game, that should be major motivation for us.
Yeah, there's two things that I'm rooting for. If we don't get to second, I need Richmond and Greenville to win their games and get first and second, because I really do not want to have to go to Union Omaha or have to watch someone else play a championship in Union, because it's just terrible, as we've spoken about. So if we can't get to second, Greenville, Richmond, please just win out. Like, we don't play you guys. Win out. Like, you guys do your job. You win out, so Union Omaha doesn't get to host and get a bye week. And then Union can finish third. We'll finish fourth. And then we'll win our playoff game, and we'll go to Richmond and beat them there, and fine. And then we root for Greenville to beat Union, and then we can all travel to Greenville for the championship game.
Honestly, I think that the championship game is going to be in Richmond. I think it's their year, and hopefully I'd like to go to Richmond and win it there, but I think they are going to keep that.
Well, if we finish fourth, that means you're saying we don't get to be in the championship game. Just saying. If we finish fourth, the only way that Richmond doesn't get to host is if we beat them. Let's make sure that's clear. So maybe you have us finishing third and going up to Richmond.
He didn't have the bracket in front of him.
Yeah, the bracket right there in front of him. No, but honestly, they have if they win it all, they definitely would have earned it. And this has been, they've had a fantastic year, and major props to them. Go easy.
You know, they could have sewn up that first spot if they would have finished out Central Valley or us. Yeah. And they failed on both accounts. And I think that says something to me, to say that opening is still there. They're a beatable team.
It shows you how close the whole league is this year. That a team like Richmond, who's been really in front most of the time, but has never been able to really pull away from anyone.
Well, what I'm doing, I'm comparing them to Richmond the last couple of years.
Sure.
Very competitive in the match, but this year they've had an amazing offseason and they've done the work this year. So you want to take some of those cues.
And I want Richmond to win out, right? Because Richmond plays Tormenta. They play Forward, who I always like watching lose. And they play Greenville. Like, I'm okay with Richmond winning out and getting first place. That's fine. Like, that helps us, right? Beating Tormenta and beating Greenville helps us. Like, I don't have a problem with that because we can't catch them. Like, they're out of reach. Like, we're not getting first. So just go ahead and win those games. Because Greenville, other than the Richmond game on the final game, they got Tucson and Charlotte. Like, I want Charlotte and Greenville to tie. Like, that way, like I'm not rooting for either of those teams. Like, Tucson, go ahead and beat Greenville. Keep your dreams of making a run alive. I think the announcer kept saying they had to win 5 straight or something like that. And even then, I was like, I think you still need a lot of help. Like, I don't think even winning 5 straight gets you there.
Yeah. I'm not putting a lot on that announcer.
Well, he kept saying they had to win 5.
He might have been talking about, like, right? Omaha or something. You never know.
Well, like Tucson, they have 4 games left, so they can get to 42 points if they win their remaining 4 games, right? That takes them to 42 points. Like, we're in 6th, and yes, we play Charlotte and Tormenta, but if we win out, we're at 46. So even if we lose a game, we're at 43. I'm not seeing, like, they need help. Like, like they don't control their own destiny, which is what he kept seeming to imply. Like, if they win out, they'll make it. I'm like, no, that's not true. Like, they need a lot of assistance. So, anyway,
he's just assuming no one else is staying up late and listening to him. That's what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is. It's one of those, like, yeah, like mathematically we can get to second. And everyone, if they heard that, would be like, yeah, that's not happening. And it's true, it's not happening. But mathematically, they can get there. But I think it's like every game has to go their way, and I just don't think it's gonna happen. But anyway, so I root for Tucson to win that game over Greenville. Like, you look at it, it's possible, right? Like, there are games that Greenville can lose to Tucson. Like, we've proven that you can lose that game, right? They play Richmond. They definitely can lose to Richmond. Tie Independence. That would be giving Greenville only 1 point the rest of the way. We can pass them at 42 points and we're at 37. That's 2 wins, right? So, like, it's theoretically there. Omaha possibly has, I mean, they don't even have a gimme game, right? I mean, they've got North Carolina, who I think they're done. I think that's the game they lose and they get eliminated. But then they play Tormenta and Central Valley. And Central Valley is a weird team. Like, they should be better than they are. Like, their record doesn't seem to match the talent you see on the field.
Agree.
And so it wouldn't surprise me to see Central Valley go play Hailstorm and go play Tucson, win both those games, and going into that game versus Union, be like, hey, we're on 40 points. We win this, we can sneak into the playoffs. Like, but once again, you just don't know. So all that to say, you win our 3 games, we host a playoff.
That's missed a major point about Hailstorm, because right now, as
they
we
need sweaters.
Are going into October, this is perfect sweater weather. And I think, you know, that right there, the power of wearing the sweater, no one does it better than
them. And so they're done before everybody else. Like, they only have 2 games left. They don't play the final weekend. They've got Central Valley and Tucson. They win those 2 games, they will be sitting there at 42 points. And theoretically, at that point, depending on what our games do and what Charlotte Independence and Tormenta's games do, they could be sitting there at home watching and rooting for whatever game's happening and knowing that they're sitting in 6, but someone's below them, that all they need is a tie to pass them. Because, you know, Hailstorm are sitting on 9 wins. They could get to 11 with 2 wins. They would need help. Like, they would need significant help to get there.
League One has too many teams make the playoffs. If someone with 9 wins
out of 28, they have a lot of draws. They have 9 draws. There really is no team that's, like, as much as you talked about Richmond has 7 losses. Yeah. In 27 games. Like, it's not like they're blowing the doors off it. Like, Union Omaha's the least amount of losses at 6 because they have 11 draws. Like, there's no team that you look at and go, yeah, this team is just killing it. Mm. Or, you know, and the announcer did bring up Tucson has a lot of one goal losses. But one goal losses is not the same as a one run loss in baseball, right? Like,
losing by two in a basketball game.
Yeah, like a one goal loss can still be a blowout, so it can be a little bit confusing. But
because we don't do grade inflation like American football.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I can't stand a 3-1 soccer match. I was like, you mean 21-7? I'm sorry. Did you just watch the Alabama game that they won 6-0? Like back when everyone was giving a hard time because Alabama was only a defensive team. And that's not the case anymore. But like, and you're giving me a hard time because I watched a 2-0 game. At least ours was the actual goal. Like we weren't giving extra points for getting close and kicking it from 40 yards away. Sorry, I actually like football. Still. All right, we've rambled a bunch. We talked about playoff scenarios. We've talked about the home game. Alex, I'm going to turn it over to you because you give us our local roundup and go from there.
So if you guys follow on Facebook, Scenic City Sports, it's a local group around here. They do a podcast. They're focused right now mostly on high school football. I go on Fridays and film highlights and things for them on the sidelines of the various high school football games. But this last Friday, I went for them and covered the UTC ladies and their conference opener against Mercer. And they won that game 1-0. Former Lady Red Wolf Mackenzie Smith had the goal right before halftime off of a corner kick. They then, over the weekend, beat the Citadel. So they're 2-0 to start conference play. Congrats to them. They are also going to be playing this Saturday. I believe it's on the road at Virginia Military Institute. And that game was going to be at 2 p.m. So they're doing that. Good for them. I know most of the other local colleges have really started to kind of do their conference play. You've got places like Dalton State and Lee University that are ranked. I believe Dalton State is hosting the number one team in NAIA over the weekend. So that should be a fun game. They play at Lakeshore Park, which is the same place that the Dalton Red Wolves play at during the summers. That's pretty much the local roundup there. Local high schools are getting ready for playoff time. That's going to be starting here on October the 8th. And keep in mind that all of the Lady High School Soccer Championships are going to be at CHI Memorial. I can't tell you exactly what day. I think it's early November.
All right. And that takes us to everybody's favorite segment, the Biggleswade Report.
This last weekend was a really exciting weekend in Biggleswade. Basically, everybody won. Everyone's a winner. Biggleswade FC, Biggleswade Town, Biggleswade United, Biggleswade Ladies. Everybody's a winner in Biggleswade. Big winners in Biggleswade. That's your Biggleswade Report.
Yep, they keep an eye out for Biggleswade Town as they continue to progress on the FA Cup.
They'll be playing Saturday.
Excellent.
Against the Larrakay Town.
All right, gentlemen. I think it's time to sign off.
It's time to go. We'll say goodbye.
Bye.
And I've got nothing, but I keep talking.
I'm just going to keep letting this go. I'm not going to hit the end button.
Not going to hit the end button.